Xawos Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. President Trump scheduled to visit the U.S. state of Texas on Tuesday. The coastal area of that state continues to be pounded with heavy rain from Tropical Storm Harvey, which made landfall late Friday as a Category 4 hurricane. Houston, Texas, the nation's fourth largest city, is getting the heaviest of the rainfall so far. Texas Governor Greg Abbott spoke about rescue and relief efforts when he appeared on Fox News Sunday.
As people can see, the flooding in Houston is dramatic. Some people will recall Tropical Storm Allison that devastated Houston in 2001, and this looks like somewhat of a replication of that. We are working to save lives and to keep as many people safe as possible in the Houston area, but at the very same time, we are conducting search and rescue missions where the hurricane hit near the Corpus Christi and Rockport areas.
More than 60 centimeters of rain have fallen in Houston so far. Some areas could see close to 130 centimeters of rain later in the week. Storm is expected to move slowly toward Houston by Wednesday, its center that is, and could form again over the Gulf of Mexico before impacting the state of Louisiana. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir has warned the migrant crisis in Libya is adversely affecting his country. Mr. Bashir said illegal migration and human trafficking is causing instability and insecurity. Sudanese leader hosted the prime ministers of Libya's government of national accord, that's Fayez al-Sarraj. This is VOA News. Iraqi forces have retaken virtually all of the city of Tal Afar, once controlled by the Islamic State, located on a supply route between the Syrian border and the recently liberated city of Mosul. University of San Francisco regional analyst Stephen Zuna said the city's Sunni IS defenders gain little support from the people of Tal Afar.
This is traditionally a predominantly a Turkmen town. That is, people who are neither Arabs nor Kurds. They speak a Turkic language, and a large minority of them are Shias.
Tens of thousands of residents reportedly fled ahead of the offensive. City's center was liberated Saturday and the national flag raised, but the damage to the city's Ottoman Empire-era antiquities is said to be heavy. The U.S. Navy says divers have recovered the remains of all 10 sailors from the USS John S. McCain, the naval ship that collided with a merchant vessel last week. U.S. investigators trying to determine what led to that collision with a Liberian tanker. In response to the incident, the Navy ordered an immediate operational pause across the U.S. fleet and dismissed the commander of the 7th Fleet in which the John S. McCain served. In the earlier collision involving a U.S. destroyer, 7 sailors from the USS Fitzgerald died when their ship collided with a container ship in the waters off of Japan. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says he still hopes to persuade North Korea to come to the negotiating table, despite Saturday's launch of what he determined as 3 short-range missiles, a decision he called provocative.
This type of launch, again, it is a violation of U.N. Security Council resolutions. So it is clearly they're still messaging us as well that they are not prepared to completely back away from their position. Having said that, we're going to continue our peaceful pressure campaign, as I have described it, working with allies, working with China as well, to see if we can bring the regime in Pyongyang to the negotiating table with a view to begin a dialogue on a different future for Korean Peninsula and for North Korea.
North Korea, which had threatened to test missiles near the U.S. Pacific island of Guam, has not launched an intercontinental ballistic missile since July 28th. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres visiting Israel and the Palestinian territories, discussing ways to revive the peace process. He is set to meet with Israeli and Palestinian leaders during his 3-day visit. It is his first since taking office. The visit comes at a time of tensions between Israel and the United Nations. Get more on that story and the rest of the hour's news at our website, voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Boateng in Washington. Today is Monday, August 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's defense minister denies he's part of a conspiracy to assassinate presidential candidate George Weah of the CDC.
It is very unfortunate that instead of the CDC focusing on the progress that Liberia needs in order to move itself forward, on the demands of the citizens of the country, CDC is belittling itself by accusing the sitting vice president, accusing a prominent businessman, and accusing the minister of defense.
Brownie Samuka is Liberia's defense minister. South Sudan's four-year-old civil war has forced more than 2,000 children to beg for food and money in the capital, Juba. And the South Sudan government says its military killed at least 16 rebels in weekend fighting, including what they called a white rebel.
What happened yesterday morning, a group of rebels attacked Kaya military garrison. In the attack, a fight ensued, and in the fighting, 16 rebels, including a white rebel, were killed. The identity of that white man is not known.
Michael Makui is South Sudan's information minister. The world's only bonobo sanctuary is rehabilitating orphan primates. And we'll tell you about a music platform in Senegal that uses mobile credit to sell songs. The stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's defense minister, Brownie Samuka, has denied that he's part of a conspiracy to assassinate presidential candidate George Weah of the opposition coalition known as the Congress for Democratic Change, CDC. He accuses the CDC of consistency in spreading false information about government officials and misleading information about itself. During a news conference on August 23rd, the CDC Youth League presented three individuals who claimed they were hired by Defense Minister Samuka and businessman George Kailondo to assassinate Weah. Samuka is a supporter of current Vice President Joseph Boakai, who is running to succeed President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, and is a competitor of Weah. Samuka tells me the assassination allegations are all fabrications.
First of all, that information is absolutely false and untrue. Doesn't exist. Never, ever happened. There was never a conspiracy, now, not tomorrow, or in the future, against anybody, much more so the leader of a major political party. The CDC have been consistent in providing false information about government officials, about a statement from themselves. You recall that they indicated that one of your senior officials met President Obama in Ghana. And that turned out to be a complete fabrication and a lie. If you can also recall, about 2 to 3 years ago, they indicated that the Minister of Defense was planning to overthrow the government. It turned out to be a lie, and the case is presently pending in court. This is the very CDC that wants to take on the mantle of political leadership in Liberia, a CDC that does not have political power, yet is able to fabricate such an information. Imagine the CDC with political power and opposition members or people who disagree with their views. Imagine what's going to happen. It will be the same thing like the Todman era. It will be the same thing like the Flanzamidon situation. And we citizens were sitting student leadership by accused and it almost got executed. It will be the same thing on the Charles Taylor, where people are sitting down and because they have political power, they're going to kill you. It is very unfortunate that instead of the CDC focusing on the progress that Liberia needs in order to move itself forward, on the demands of the citizens of the country, CDC is belittling itself by accusing the sitting vice president, accusing a prominent businessman, and accusing the Minister of Defense. Secondly, the time period in which they said the Minister of Defense was in the country, when these discussions were happening and exchanges were being made and plots were being designed, the Minister of Defense was in Washington, D.C., attending to his medical doctor. How could the Minister of Defense be in the United States at the same time being in Monrovia and talking to an individual that he doesn't know about a plot to get rid of Joshua? Why?
But, Mr. Minister, they say that according to the accusation or the allegations that you hire assassins to carry out this
plot. It's a bloody lie. I'm sorry to say that. There's no sense to even have a discussion about that. Why would I want to do that? For what reason? For what basis? You see some crack nuts, I'll go and find and give them, sorry to say that, and take my team hardcore money, give it to $10,000, let them produce the $10,000, let them give you the phone record of where they met me, let them give you any recording. Do they even know what I look like besides seeing me on newspapers? It's absolutely a fabrication.
You are defense minister of Liberia. Let me ask you, why do you think anyone would want to implicate you or accuse you of plotting to assassinate a major political party leader?
No, it's not anyone accusing me. It is the CDC. They have a proclivity of providing false information. Relying on the segment of the population that is not well-read, a segment of the population that uses their emotions, a segment of the population that follow the populism, who are going through a complete in-depth understanding of issues. That is what they have done.
You know, Mr. Defense Minister, the allegation people have made is that you are defense minister of the country who is supposed to be a neutral person, but yet they say you support the vice president who is running for election as president.
Well, I made it very clear in one of my interviews with you, when you asked me a question as to who I was supporting, I didn't indicate I was going to support the vice president. And I say again today that I think the most responsible political leadership that is needed for this country now to take the agenda where President Sirleaf will be stopping come the end of the election time period, where President Sirleaf has worked so hard over the past 11 years to get us to where we are. We want to continue those programs. And that is why the individual that I believe can execute these programs that need to be continued is the vice president. And that is why I stand to support the vice president. I don't stand to support someone who is going to sit down to accuse a sitting minister of defense of trying to assassinate him. And like I told them, I have no intention to work for any one of them. None absolutely whatsoever.
What do you say when they say that you still being a defense minister, supporting a leading presidential candidate, that might cloud you carrying out your responsibility of defending the country and everybody who, say, for example, running for office?
There's no precedent to any action on my part that suggests that at all. I have maintained consistency in the course of work that I do. I am very clear in my political views, and those political views have always been there since I've been serving as Minister of Defense since 2006. I've never utilized a political view against the interests of the country, neither have I utilized my own political views to provide any influence on the orders of the military. The military have their own function, they have the order, they have the chain of command, they are completely apolitical. I do not put those two together.
Brownie Samukai is Liberia's defense minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The South Sudan government says its military killed 16 rebels loyal to former first vice president Riek Machar during weekend fighting in the town of Kaya near the borders with Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. According to a report in the Sudan Tribune newspaper, also killed was 26-year-old Christopher Allen, identified as an American freelance journalist covering the South Sudan civil war. The report said the U.S. Embassy in Juba confirmed Allen's death in a statement. But South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay says the so-called white man killed was not a freelance journalist but a rebel because he carried no identity as a journalist.
What happened yesterday morning, a group of rebels attacked Kaya military garrison. In the attack, a fight ensued, and in the fighting, 16 rebels, including a white rebel, were killed. The identity of that white man is not known, but he was among those who attacked the garrison. He was at his full gear fighting in line with his colleagues, the rebels.
Mr. Minister, according to the story I'm reading on from the wires, this Mr. Christopher Allen was a freelance journalist. Why do you call him a white rebel?
He is not a freelance journalist. He is a rebel. So far, he attacked the town together with the rebels, and he was killed in the line of the rebels. He is not a freelance journalist. We don't know that because when he was killed, there was no any identification to show that he was anything. That is one. Number two, we have no such a person who entered, such a journalist who entered South Sudan and was allowed to go to whatever area. So this man, we don't know his identity. If the Americans are saying that he's an American, then they know how he entered. But he did not enter through our official entry routes. He came, attacked with the rebels, and was killed. This is why we say he's a rebel.
So your government has no information of Mr. Allen entering your country?
He has not entered our country.
So, I mean, you said there was no identity on him, but did you make any effort to... So where is his body?
His body is now in Juba Military Hospital, here in Juba.
Has your government contacted the U.S. Embassy?
We are not ready to contact the U.S. Embassy because there is nothing which indicates that he is an American. It is anybody who believes that that person is, you should go to the mortuary and identify the person, not us.
So you call him a white rebel. I'm wondering whether your government or military have past experiences with so-called white rebels fighting on the side of the anti-government forces.
Listen, please. We are not in a position to identify that person. So we should not, you should not expect us to contact any embassy and tell them that this is your man. It is that embassy which believes that they have lost a journalist who entered South Sudan through other illegal means and died, that can go and look for that person, not us. So anyway, I call upon those who are claiming that person who died in the lines of the rebels. If there are anybody who is claiming that person, should come forward and tell us as to how their citizen entered South Sudan and be on the side of the rebels fighting against South Sudan government.
Are you making that call to the U.S. Embassy?
If they are the ones who have confirmed it, then they should tell us how did their citizen enter South Sudan fighting side by side with the rebels.
Minister, I thank you very much again. It's such a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Michael Makuia, South Sudan's Information Minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, August 28th. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. A local NGO in Juba says South Sudan's nearly four-year-old conflict has forced more than 2,000 children to beg for food or money in the streets of the capital, Juba. The Christian Agency for Development says most of the children were separated from their families after fighting broke out in their villages. As Michael Atit reports from Juba, some of the children say they came from faraway villages.
15-year-old Martin says when violence broke out in Kapoita last year, he separated from his parents and never saw them again. While fleeing Kapoita, he met a truck driver who helped him come to Juba. Speaking in Arabic, Martin says he met other young people in Konyokonyo market and liked them. Now, picks food from garbage bins or eats leftovers from Juba restaurants.
Here sometimes we collect garbage, crystals, and we get some little money. We buy some food and jointly eat together because it's not good to eat alone.
Martin says living on the street has taught him to peacefully coexist with other kids regardless of their ethnic backgrounds. He says for the past several months, Juba Street have become his home. Martin says another street kid who hails from his home village told him that his father was killed during last year fighting in Kapoita. 11-year-old James says he got separated from his parents when fighting flared up in Juba in July last year when government forces battled soldiers loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar. He says his parents fled the Haigem area near the presidential palace where all of the shooting started. James says after being separated from his family, he began to beg for money and food in Juba's Melekia area. Speaking in Arabic, he says sometimes he washes people's cars for money to buy food, but it is not enough to survive.
We have learned how to smoke and take other substances. Sometimes police don't allow us to enter to some places. They beat us. And some elders also threaten us and can pick whatever you have in your hand.
A local NGO called Minds and Souls Institute, together with the NGO Christian Agency for Development, conducted an assessment recently and learned that more than 2,000 children lived on Juba Street. Their survey found that about 60% of kids living on the street fled their homes due to the conflict. On Thursday, the NGO gathered up to 125 street children from Juba's Melekia area and gave them clothes and food. They also treated about half of the children who had various injuries. Peter Malir, executive director for Christian Agency for Development, says due to deteriorating economic and humanitarian conditions in South Sudan, many families can no longer feed their children.
Number of parents have died in the conflict. Number of parents have lost their economic life survival. And these hands have affected number of these children. So we have realized that as much as we are sitting as citizens of this country, part of our country is breaking away.
Unless the fighting ends soon, Malir warns, children living on the streets will adopt to lawlessness and could become a security threat in the future. Malir says his NGO hopes to open a home for street children in the near future so they can be provided with psychosocial support and vocational training. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Bonobos are primates that are very closely related to chimpanzees and humans. They are found exclusively in the Democratic Republic of Congo. It's not completely clear how many of them there are, but it is known that their numbers are on the decline. The world's only bonobo sanctuary is committed to ensuring these animals survive and stay wild. Viewer's Kevin Enoch reports.
Alola-Ya Bonobo Sanctuary is the world's only sanctuary for these primates. Here, orphans rescued primarily from the bushmeat trade are rehabilitated and prepared to be sent back into the wild. Every one of these animals is vital to ensuring the survival of the species.
You know the bonobos are native to the DRC. They are found in natural environments and on the left bank of the majestic Congo River. And because of this, they are threatened mainly by poaching. They are disappearing.
The best estimates suggest there are only between 10 and 50,000 bonobos left in the wild. The 52 bonobos now here are rehabilitated, then wander over a 35-hectare sanctuary, learning to live again on their own.
Every morning we give them leafy green vegetables. Before giving the vegetables to them, we disinfect it with vinegars, and then we give it to the bonobos.
Local farmers are employed by the sanctuary to provide fresh fruit and vegetables.
It helps the family because when my husband plants and after harvest, they bring the vegetables here. They weigh and pay us according to their imposed price. That's why what little they give us helps to feed the children.
The bonobos are endangered, along with the other great apes, chimpanzees, orangutans, and gorillas. Since 2009, the sanctuary has recorded 3 births among the rehabilitated animals, which they say is their goal, to teach bonobos to live on their own. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
MusicBee, a music platform in Senegal that uses mobile credit to sell tunes, has taken on Senegalese-American superstar Akon as a 50% stakeholder. Founder and director general of MusicBee, Mustapha Diop, talks to Ricky Stryak about how they want to be the iTunes of Africa and expand to TV.
Yeah, it couldn't call us, and it was very happy to be a member of the shareholders. Yeah, he was very excited when he discovered our platform. So especially the way people pay, you know, usually platforms are done in the United States or Europe, and most of the time, the payment method is based on a credit card or something like that. And as you should know, in Africa, most of the people have no bank account. So he was excited the payment method was based on the credit of the phone. So he called us and, he was very excited to push our platform. Second point was the fact he was really proud that it's African platform made by Africans, totally developed by Africa.
As Akon is a musician, and I know a lot of African musicians, one of their main hurdles is making money with all the pirating that goes on, especially on the continent. How does MusicBee allow musicians to make a living?
Yeah, MusicBee, there's some important values in MusicBee. One of the most of them is the fact, first, we don't consider big or great musicians or something like that. We don't have the pretension to say this musician is good or this musician is not good. So every musician can be on the platform. That's the first point, really important. It addresses all the artists, all the musicians. And how you said, in Africa, the piracy is very, very, very big and important. MusicBee is a way to fight the piracy, because most of the time people buy pirate products because just about the fact that they don't know where to buy.
What does Akon coming on board mean for MusicBee?
As you know, Akon is a well-known artist. Yeah, being on board helps MusicBee first to go faster, to hire faster musicians in the platform. And the second point is, yeah, with this money, we have more possibility to increase MusicBee. Another thing is, Akon has a vision more big than we had. For us, MusicBee was just a platform for distribution digital music distribution. But Akon had a big goal. He want not just distribute music, but promote, produce, and there's a TV license he bought to film all the artists who are in the platform and have content, TV content.
That was Mustafa Diop, founder and director general of Music B. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sporting. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the 2017 FIBA Basketball Championship, which ended on Sunday night in Bamako, Mali. Nigeria claimed their third FIBA Women's Basketball title after beating Senegal 65-48 in Sunday's final. Evelyn Ekiato led the way with team highs of 13 points and 7 rebounds in the winning effort. And courtesy of qualifying for the final, both Nigeria and Senegal have qualified for the FIBA Women's Basketball World Cup 2018 in Spain. Earlier in the day, Mali claimed the last spot on the podium after edging out Mozambique 75-52 in the third-place game. And now to rugby news. And following the 19-all draw last Sunday, Hong Kong showed Kenya a rugby masterclass by crushing the home side 43-34. It was a bitter pill for the Simbas, who had made a number of changes to strengthen their squad. The result saw the Dragons clinch the Tattoo Series trophy after forcing Kenya Simbas Lions to a 19-19 stalemate in the first test last weekend, played at the same venue. Hong Kong ran in 4 tries, 4 conversions and 5 penalties against 4 converted tries and 2 penalties from the Kenyans. And staying with rugby, South Africa Springbok coach Alistair Kotze has praised the team's planning and the players' conditioning following their 41-23 bonus point win over the Pumas on Saturday evening in Salta, Argentina. South Africa defeated the Pumas by 37-15 in Port Elizabeth last weekend and have 9 points from their last rugby championship matches. In athletics, South Africa's Caster Semenya brought her glittering season to an end by smashing the world record in the rally run 600 meters. The 26-year-old Olympic gold medalist and 3 times world champion over 800 meters clocked a stunning 1 minute 21.77 seconds over the unusual distance at the Istaff meet in the German capital of Berlin. She took 0.86 seconds off the previous best set by Cuba's Ana Fidelia Curiot in 1997. Semenya says she was delighted to end her season in the German capital where she won world gold 8 years ago. In football news, Egyptian giants Zamalek are facing a race against time to appoint a new coach before the start of the season. They are currently in advanced talks with Montenegrin Nebojša Jovović to fill their vacant managerial seat. The Cairo Giants were close to hiring former Belgian coach Franky Vercauturien last week, only to be snubbed by the 60-year-old who, according to reports, was not satisfied with the club's offer. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, August 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very productive week.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dyke, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.